You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line today is Mr. Red Beckman, an author and American patriot concerned about the future of America. Red, welcome. How are you today, sir?
Well, I'm at least partially here. I'm 87 years old and wearing pretty thin, and but I haven't found the exit door yet, so I'm still here.
Very good. Now, regular readers of American Free Press are going to be familiar with some of your books and some of the work you've done over the years. But for those of, for people that really aren't aware of what you've been up to, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the issues that you've written about over the years?
Well, you see, I'm just a high school graduate out of a high school in Montana. Montana is my favorite state, my home state. And I was a cat skinner, a truck driver, and all of that. And the IRS got my attention. And starting in 57 and 63 and 74, and I took them on. I said, we don't need this kind of scum in this country. I'm a veteran of the Korean War. We don't need this. And so I took them on, and I have written 8 books, and of course the classic there is The Law That Never Was, which is the research results of a massive research project that the people in Montana took on starting in 1980. And it proves that the 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution, the Income Tax Amendment, was never lawfully ratified. It's a fraud from its very inception. And this is documented very, very solid with about 18,000 certified documents, the last I heard. I'm the co-author of that book, The Law That Never Was. And it's been quite an experience getting brushed aside by the powers that be in Washington, D.C., until I figured out who they were and where they were coming from and what they had in mind. So that's my background. I've traveled this country. My wife and I traveled the country as a public speaker for over 30 years, and there's a lot of videos out there, the videotapes. I've never copyrighted any of my videos, and there's a lot of people out there saying that my videos are the best videos out there for the American people.
I see. Very good. Now, in your opinion, what are some of the biggest problems confronting America?
One of the biggest problems, of course, is that the federal judiciary is totally out of control. And they're the most sophisticated bunch of criminals in all of history, I guess. I sued a federal judge in Montana. I sued the senior federal judge in 1993. I sued him with a Title 42. I was asking for damages because I had been damaged severely by his activities. And that case was docketed with the U.S. Supreme Court in the first week of August of 1996. 4 months later, the Solicitor General, who is the heavy-duty attorney in the Justice Department that defends the government in all cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, if the government is a party, and he contacted all, he sent notices to all of the parties to the action that I had filed and said that I was correct, and that he was not going to oppose me. Now, I was very, very, very busy at that time, 96, 7. My goodness, I traveled. I flew all over the world, practically, and producing television specials and writing books and everything. And I didn't really compensate or comprehend. What it was that caused the Solicitor General to give the report that he did, where he said I was correct, and that he could not oppose me. But it finally dawned on me, years later, it dawned on me that the reason that he refused to oppose me There was a clause that I had put in that complaint. It was only three or four pages. I said that, let's see, I get ahead of myself here sometimes. The judge, he had given me a hard time. I had filed four actions. I demanded Seventh Amendment, common law jury trials, and he had dismissed every one of those cases without a hearing or anything else. And so I was very frustrated with that, and that's why I filed the Title 42 action, because he had violated my constitutionally secured rights. That's Title 18, Section 241 and 242. It's very clear, a very clear, clearly stated statutes, and he had violated them in my situation. It dawned on me with a Solicitor General that he had read that statement in my complaint where I said I reserved the right to amend the complaint at any point in the proceedings if I felt that there was another defendant that should be involved. The Solicitor General, I said that the judge, Judge Batten, the senior federal judge in Montana, former congressman appointed by Nixon at the federal bench, he was an outlaw. He was a criminal. He was a drunk. He was a wife abuser. I knew all of this.
Okay.
And he, I said he was a beneficiary of the tax laws. The taxes of the American people were paying his wages. That gave him a real serious conflict of interest. And when that Solicitor General wrote that or read that complaint and all and found that I had said that I would amend the complaint if I needed to at any point, he recognized that he himself, the Solicitor General, was a beneficiary of the tax laws of this country. That case is still docketed with the U.S. Supreme Court. You can't find it. They've hidden that thing because those 13 justices of the U.S. Supreme Court all have a conflict of interest in any tax matter whatever because they are all beneficiaries of the tax laws. Now, I'm talking common sense. I'm not talking statutes and all of that. That doesn't even enter into the picture. So I'll let you go with your questioning, and
okay.
I'll try to answer.
Yeah, sure. And we wanted to talk about this and how it applies to what's going on in Oregon and what's transpired over the course of the past week or so. And before we get into that, I'm just curious. I'm sure you've been following some of the coverage that AFP has provided about the Oregon standoff. I actually drove up there and interviewed some of the individuals involved, including the now deceased Lavoy Finicum, who was killed by the Oregon State Police, by an agent of the Oregon State Police, in a joint operation with the FBI. Yeah, so what are your thoughts on the standoff and what was taking place up there? Do you have any comments?
I have a lot of comments because they've got a whole bunch of lawyers in there. They've got a bunch of lawyers up there trying to make a money, some bucks and one thing another, and they're on the wrong track. They're not going to pick up on this solicitor. On the conflict of interest. They're not going to do it because there's no place for a lawyer in a Seventh Amendment common law jury action. That is the highest court in our land, the Seventh Amendment jury. You see, people, they just can't seem to comprehend that we the people were at the Constitutional Convention in 1787. We're still here. We're
right.
Still here. The people are still here. And when they sit on a Seventh Amendment common law jury, there isn't a court in our land that can interfere or overturn their decision.
Yeah, could
what
you,
does that
could,
tell you?
Yeah, could you talk more about that? I'm looking at the I have a pocket constitution here that I keep by me all the time, and I'm looking at the Seventh Amendment, and it deals with rights in civil cases, and it's specifically talking about common law. Could you maybe elaborate on what the Seventh Amendment really is and what its purpose is?
Well, I'll tell you, the founders, when they, we the people, when we were writing the Constitution, back there, we had a problem because there was about 25 or 26 lawyers at least, as delegates, to the convention, and most of them were in favor of establishing a monarchy. And so we had a few of the better heads that, you know, were battling that all the way through. That's why that took so many months and weeks of effort to do that. And they didn't get it into the Constitution itself. They got it into the Bill of Rights, and it was adopted as part of the Constitution in 1791, December. There were a number of the 13 colonies that refused to ratify the Constitution as we the people wrote it. But when they read that Bill of Rights, they recognized something. We the people had set a trap for public servants that refused to obey the laws that we the people wrote to govern them. And that Seventh Amendment is it. You see, I you know, I'll test it, try anybody to, or I'll, let me see, I have a little trouble with my language sometimes because of my mental, I've had too many mental strokes or small strokes, and my short-term memory doesn't work too well. You see, now, you see, the lawyers and all public servants, you have no problem finding public servants that will defend government in any controversy. There is no authority, none. I'm saying this, and I'm challenging every lawyer, I'm challenging every law student in the country. Show me where the Constitution gives any public servant any authority, whatever, to defend the government. We the people wrote that Constitution. We are the defenders of the Constitution. We are the ones that make the findings of fact and conclusions of law having to do with constitutional rights and such. Now, the judge, the federal judge that started this process up there in Oregon, I don't remember his name now, I've seen it.
Judge Steve Gratzky.
He was defending government, wasn't he?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I've been following the story from the beginning, and it seems very clear to me that pretty much all of the county officials, the county sheriff and the county judge who we just mentioned, they seem to be totally subservient to the feds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about that. I ran for governor in Montana. I was leading all the polls. I ran as a Jeffersonian Democrat on the Democratic side of the ballot, and it was a real lark for me. But in 1988, I had the polls all showing me winning the Democratic primary, but they couldn't let that happen. They took a bunch of students from the Chicago political system and brought them out there and showed them how to do vote theft, you know, vote fraud. I came in fifth out of six. That's what they did. Now, I was busy. I didn't really worry that much about it because it was, I guess I anticipated it. I'm no short term. I'm not no late arrival on the scene. I've been at it for over 50 years at this point. And so you know, this conflict of interest thing, it has stopped traffic. I've got people all over the country that have used this in their traffic cases. But you see, most of the states, I think of all of them, if I'm not mistaken, have got a law that says that a portion or percentage of the fines that a traffic court judge levies goes into his retirement account. Well, now that sounds like a conflict of interest, doesn't it?
Yes, no doubt.
And so, and see, the simple, the ordinary guy off the, of the, we the people that are off the street, he recognized that. You don't have to be a judge. You don't have to be a lawyer to understand that. And that's where we're in trouble, because everybody has to go to a lawyer and they get things complicated with all the statutes in the Congress. They can't, they just can't seem to quit producing more statutes. And so, it's simplicity. And that family that lost their husband and father and patriot in there, he was unarmed, am I correct?
You know, that's the thing, that a lot of people are claiming that he was unarmed, but I believe the official story says that he was armed, and I tend to go with, I don't think the man was armed.
Well, here's the thing, he has the right to be armed.
Well, right, exactly. Now,
he's got the right, and if they're going to use that, they're in trouble.
Right. Now, I'm curious, how could, and we're referring to Lavoie Finicum, who, again, I did interview when I was at the Mount Hewer National Wildlife Refuge. He served as one of the key spokesmen of the occupation, and he seemed very determined and dedicated and principled. He was a good American patriot, as far as I could tell. Now, how can his family go about obtaining justice for
Here's what I would recommend. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are smarter than I am, and probably in the family that are smarter than I am. But I'm available if they have any questions. Somebody needs to write a complaint and file it as a Title 42, which is what I filed against Judge Batten in 1993. And that's 23 years ago. And you see, I didn't really try to capitalize on what had happened, because I didn't know if I was on enough solid footing and everything. I'm not a lawyer. I'm an old cat skinner, truck driver, construction worker, and all that, a high school graduate. Well, you see, our God, he likes to work with people like the old fisherman Peter and such. And he didn't go to the temple to find his disciples. And so for some reason, he has blessed me with some... well, I've had some inspiration that has been rather significant, and this is one of the things, this conflict of interest thing. I'll never forget the first traffic case was down in Alabama, and a pretty well-informed patriot had gotten caught in a traffic stop. He didn't have a traffic violation, no, but he had driven into a business and parked in their parking lot. Before he got to, he saw what was coming, what was in the road, and what was holding him up, the traffic. And so he drove in there, and he had cops all over him in a hurry, and they hauled him off to jail, and it cost him an $800 cash bond to get out of jail. And here he is. No, he just drove into that parking lot as anybody had a right to do. And This fellow fought that city. I can't even tell you the name of the city, but he fought that city for about 6 months, and they had him backed into a corner, and he couldn't get out of it. And somebody told him, said, call Red Beckman. He called me, and I didn't know him, of course, and I listened to his story, and I said, you go to the closest federal court and file a Title 42 action. That's a Blivens action. You file a Title 42 against that traffic court judge. Don't name the prosecutor. Don't name the police. Don't name anybody else. Just the magistrate. you filed Title 42 against him. When that judge got served that summons, he immediately sat down and wrote a motion to dismiss and signed it. Called the city attorney and said what I've done. He said, what he had done. And he said, you better try to straighten this out because it's a mess. That patriot, he made quite a few bucks off of that one. He took them to the cleaners. And
wow.
And so, you see, this works in all kinds of cases. Now, that judge up there in Oregon, all that family, and don't go to the Bundys and don't go to the guys over there. Go to the family, the Finicum. They are the ones that really are paying a terrible price. The American people will sympathize, especially if they think that he was unarmed.
And now,
Title 42.
Let me mention, by the way, it appears he was actually armed. I'm looking at a report here, and even some of the eyewitnesses were saying he was armed. So, I mean, there's different stories, but it appears he was, in fact, armed.
That's fine. That doesn't make a bit of difference.
Okay, keep going.
He had a constitutionally secured right to be a gun carrier. That's that much more. I mean, and so the family, don't go with that bunch over there that are in Portland right now to hear for the hearings and all of that. You see, there's quite a bit of Mormon background into this thing. I don't know about Finicum, but I'm not worried about his religious belief or anything else. His family is paying a terrible price.
Now, Finicum, he lives in Arizona. And the judge that you're referring to, Steve Gratzke, he is actually the county judge. So how exactly – so they would have to – the family would have to file this particular complaint at the county level against this judge?
I would file it at federal level.
So you file it at the federal level in the state of Oregon?
Judge. There's a federal judge involved. Where? I don't remember.
Well, right. So the family would file the complaint against the federal judge, or
the
against
the federal judge. Don't name anybody else because they want it so that they can subpoena that cop that shot the guy, and they can subpoena all these different people. They can subpoena all of them. And I'll tell you, this case will shut that Oregon deal. It'll shut it down tight. And the feds will have to tuck their tail between their legs and head for Washington, D.C.
Wow.
And not only that, but people are getting so angry in this country thanks to Donald Trump. I wouldn't vote for Trump today. You know, I probably would today if the election was now, but I don't know enough about him. But I know he's got the American people. He's a spark that has really started something. And we've got an idea. We've got the perfect situation. You see, if I'd have known what I know today, I would have probably tried to start something back there. But you see, there is such a thing as trying to be in God's time. God has a time for all of this to happen, and I think this could very well be it. Every federal judge in this country has been involved in a conspiracy that we can document. That they are not going to allow a jury in the United States of America in federal court to hear the evidence that we put together on the fraud of the 16th Amendment. Every federal judge has been warned. I was subpoenaed to a tax case in Fort Worth, Texas. In March of 1983, this is before Bill Benson's going out and collecting. Bill Benson never did get the picture, but he was an excellent investigator. It cost me a lot of money. I'm not a guy that made any money off the Patriot Movement. I made a little money on some of my books, but I've given a lot of books away, And I've helped a lot of people with their cases, and I've helped a lot of people. Because I've been I have been a successful businessman. I had money in the bank and I was afraid to leave it there because the banks are probably going to glom on to all our money. So I bought three homes here in the last few months for three of my granddaughters. And I'm just as pleased, as proud as punch. And they're sure happy with the situation. And I got the money out away from the banker's control. That's
very 1%, good.
That 1%, less than 1% interest. I have $100,000 CDs, and they were paying less than 1%. And I said, that's enough of that. And all the prognosticators now, the financial experts are saying we're going to have a meltdown here or something. And it could happen. I don't know. But I think that our Heavenly Father has some plans. And this new technology now that's coming out is pretty exciting. And there's bankers right now that are in trouble, serious trouble on this credit thing. I have to follow a lot of this stuff if I can, but I'm pretty much incapacitated here. I'm in trouble, and I have been for quite a while. And but our Heavenly Father wants me around for a while because, like I say, He hasn't shown me that exit door yet.
Right. Well, you've certainly done a lot of good work over the years, and you've sort of been at the forefront of this coming revolution, and I think we will see it. The people are getting fed up, and as you mentioned, I think Donald Trump has really touched the hearts of millions of people across this country, and we're sick and tired of being lied to. We're sick and tired of this tyrannical federal government, and we're seeing more and more people wake up to some of these issues. So
the federal government is a satanic force, and there is no question about it. And you see, this is why when Putin made the statement in Russia that Russia is the only Christian nation left on the face of the earth, now you know why the neocons want to start a third world war.
No doubt.
I'll bet you haven't thought of that one.
No. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me.
Well, that's it. That's the, Putin is a very, very intelligent man. And in some of my recent writings, I said that the miracle that came in Russia in December of 91, the people of Russia, Alexander Solzhenitsyn told us they had murdered over 65 million of the Russian people. There wasn't a family in Russia that hadn't been affected. I just had an interview with a young lady from Russia here just in the matter of a couple of weeks ago. And it just blew her mind. She's Christian, but she had never really thought about it being a miracle. She hadn't really thought about the fact that the people of Russia had no place to go. They couldn't go to the United States and say, help us, help us, help us, help us. They couldn't go to any place on the face of the earth and get any help. They got on their knees and they talked to the Creator. And the Creator brought a miracle to those people, and we are still, at this point in time, that miracle is still functioning and is operating as I speak.
Right. Yeah. Well, very well said, sir. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today. We will certainly try to get this information to the Finicum family and to some of the other people that are involved with this.
And don't hesitate to give them my phone number. I can't leave my house. I can't. I've got to carry my urinal with me all the time. I'll tell you, we're overhauling my website. I have a website. It's just redbeckman.com. And if you haven't read that, if you haven't gone there, and if you haven't looked at some of our videos, I get the most fantastic phone calls. They look at that. They see those videos, and they just thrilled to death because they recognize how they've been shortchanged in our public education system. That's a satanic force that our education system they're peddling lies, falsehoods, and misleading people. And our Heavenly Father is going to make some difference one of these days, and they're going to, they want a new world order. George Bush, when he gave his, George Sr., when he gave his, one of his State of the Union messages to the Congress when he was president, he said, you're going to get a new world order, whether you like it or not.
That's right. I remember that speech. You can still find it on YouTube.
Yeah, I got news for you. That new world order that they're talking about is a counterfeit new world order to the new world order that our Messiah King is bringing with him when he comes. He's going to have a new world order, and he says the government of the planet of the earth will be on his shoulders. It'll tell you in the book of Obadiah that there won't be an Edomite left on this planet when God gets done judging them. This is stuff that I discern. A little over a year ago or so, Obama and Netanyahu had a falling out. And Netanyahu, he made a statement. He said, if the United States won't take care of Iran and wipe them out, then we'll probably have to do it ourselves. Putin sent Netanyahu a message. He said, you tried to wipe out Iran, and he says, we'll melt Israel down. Now, that's not Israel. That's satanic counterfeit Israel. That's what that is. There's John Hopkins University, in their research, they say that less than 10% of the population of counterfeit Israel over there have any Israel blood in their veins. All the rest of them are outlaws. No blood, no Israel blood in their veins at all.
Right.
Now, what does that tell you? Satan is the greatest counterfeiter that there ever was. In the Bible, it tells you give your 10% to your Messiah King of your increase. 10%, called a tithe. The income tax, the federal income tax, is a satanic counterfeit of what God ordained back there in the scriptures. That's why the IRS claims, oh, you've got a voluntary system. It's voluntary. You volunteer and you make your own assessment and the whole works. You file. The churches, the preachers in the churches say, oh, you've got to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I can tell you,
right.
I've written about those churches and what they teach. There's no Lucifer. There's no room in the constitutional republic that we the people created. There's no room there whatever for a Caesar.
Right. Yeah.
And
exactly
there's no
right.
room for a counterfeit tithe run by that satanic force in Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we will have a link over to your site, Red, and you can see some of these videos. It looks like there's a 12-part series where you go into detail about all of these subjects. So, listeners out there, definitely be sure to take the time and check out some of these videos. If you want some more information, you can also
find a lot of stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Red, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well,
I really appreciate
it. Thank you for listening, and I just hope that at some point our Heavenly Father has someone that he can use to do the work that needs to be done. I'm praying that you're the man.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
The people need the truth in this country. Truth is so powerful. And every that oath of office that we took, I took it November 5 of 1951 to go into service. We swore to uphold and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. We never asked a question. We were so dumb we didn't know nothing, and we never thought about asking them, well, who's the domestic enemies? Well, now I can tell you who the domestic enemies are. The domestic enemies are those people that defend the government and violate their constitutional oath to uphold and defend the government. I mean, defend the Constitution. Now, that's, we've got, they talk about, citizen militia, terrorists and all that. How about domestic enemies? Let's start talking about them. Any public servant that goes outside of the Constitution and defends the government using all the fancy codes and such that the Congress can, boy, they have a problem.